And so as we were worshiping, there was this point where Robin started playing on the piano. And we shifted into this new space, or I did anyway. And it was like it was a beautiful field. And everywhere I looked, I could see like just wild flowers everywhere. And my favorite, see, God speaks to us in our favorite things because he knows that we are those who delight in things. And so all of these flowers were just, I love dainty. I love little. I'm not like, whoo, showy and need big fancy things. I like little, delicate, cute, simple. And so they were just a bunch of different colorful wildflowers everywhere I looked. And it made me smile. It made my soul smile. I was delighting in being in this space. And the reality is that I am. Despite what's going on, that's where he has my feet right now. And it reminded me of what John and I had read on our Wednesday live. There's a part in Proverbs 31, and you don't have to turn there. Just listen. It's 31, starting in verse 16. It says, she evaluates a field, or she considers the field, and she buys it. She considers the field, and she buys it, and she plants a vineyard, and she harvests. And I know that this is where my story has led, is this field. Now, if you're like me, you're asking, how do we buy a field? How do we consider a field and buy it? By agreement. That's where it starts, is by agreement. God shows you lofty things through revelation. Maybe somebody spoke prophetically over you and it was lofty. It's big, it's bigger than you. And at that point, we consider the field, right? Anybody ever had a big prophecy that's bigger than you? You just don't remember. I remember your prophecies. At that moment, when God reveals what's hidden, we consider it. We're in the space of considering, what would that look like? What's it going to feel like to be standing in that? Who will be with me? You know, you ask all of these consideration questions. And at what point do we start buying what it is that we've been considering? We move beyond just this space of, what will it all look like? To, I'm purchasing this. I'm all in on this. I believe God. Dating back to my encounter with Holy Spirit, which would have been in 1998. I've been considering the field. Prior to that, when I was 15, my brother and I were trying to get into a Christian school, and we were told what we had to do so. So I asked Jesus into my heart. I will say that from the time I was little, I had a relationship with God. And what was to come beyond this point of asking Jesus into my heart paled in comparison to what my little world was like with God. I was insulated by God. As little, I knew him. And things got a little mushy and not so black and white anymore and very gray in my teenage years because I wasn't really introduced to Jesus. I was introduced to religion. And I learned that the things that maybe my heart was longing for weren't exactly as they appeared. And all these perfect little families that attended church together because mine didn't. They were perfect little hypocrites. They did all the things that the public school kids did, and worse, I might add. Yes. The things that went on in these little modulars. Christian schools aren't the answer. Jesus is. Religion's not the answer. Jesus is. So I spent the next 3 years walking out this religious path and learning how to be quite the little hypocrite myself. Walking the line, towing the edge. How far can I go? Listen, I was the girl that went to slumber parties prior to this, prior to my conversion experience. I was the girl that would go to slumber parties. Everybody else would sneak out and I would stay to answer the parent. I was just good by default. Actually, I had a friend named Angie. And she was bad Angie and I was good Angie. That's what they called us. Good Angie or bad Angie? Because bad Angie was bad. She was doing all the things that one should never do. And I don't even have the conviction of the spirit. And I know this is, you don't do this. You don't do this. But because I was raised up by God, his hand was on me. He kept me. So it wasn't that like I was just producing goodness everywhere I went. It was the Lord's hand was on me. So I make it through this high school experience, met John. We actually showed up on the same day, 2 weeks late for the same school. Crazy. Well, I thank you, U.S. Army. But after we got married and after Dylan was born, well, during that time frame, I became very hungry, just insatiably hungry for the things of God. And I was very inquisitive. I thought I was asking all the right people all the right questions, but nobody seemed to be able to satisfy my hunger, my desire. And so everything just felt like, ugh, I felt hopeless. Like there's no, if these people who I think have all the answers and are living the thing out, if they can't answer these, then what's actually going on here? Where's this hunger coming from? And it got to the point where I showed up to church one day, and I've got little Dylan with me. He's little. And I show up to church, and I like everything in me is just trembling. I can't stop shaking, and I have no idea why the heck I'm shaking. It just wouldn't stop. And so I go out, and their mutual aunt is in the foyer, and another person that you should have all the answers, right? Do you do that where, like, you know, in your younger years where you're, like, looking at different people and they seem like the role model that you want to, like, be like. And so I go up to the aunt and I'm like, I don't know what's wrong with me. Can you tell me what's wrong with me? Because I can't stop shaking. And it was just kind of like double tap there. Just go sit back down. I still don't have any answers. But this trembling wouldn't go away. And I was to be baptized by water that day out at the lake. And I had been sprinkled as a child. Anybody else got sprinkled when they were a child? I was sprinkled as a child. I was baptized into the Catholic Church, and which has just its own beauty. And I don't want to negate that, but I had never been like fully immersed in baptism, and it was important to me. And so the pastor of our church had just got done preaching a message on the order of the kingdom and how you must be baptized by water before you can be baptized by the Spirit. And so he called all of us up, and the congregation was going to gather around and pray over us before we went out to the lake for our little picnic and our dunking. And I hardly made it to the front. I was shaking violently by the time I got up to the front, and I'm just standing there wondering what's wrong with me, and then boom, I'm out. I mean, just out. And I remember Lynn Salisbury following me to the ground. So she's like the one that's like clued in on what's really going on. And so she follows me to the ground, and she's speaking in this language that I'd never heard before. And it's funny because I was, you know, raised up in a charismatic church all through my high school years, but I did not know the spiritual things. It's kind of a sad situation. And anyway, so I was, long story short, I was filled with the Spirit that day. And at that moment, everything changed. Everything changed. Every color had a brilliance to it that I had never seen before with my natural eyes. It's kind of like my inner world was flipped inside out, because trust me when I tell you, my little girl world with God was vibrant. It was full of light. In fact, my expectation on this whole inviting Jesus into my life thing was interesting. I had anticipated this moment for the entirety of a whole day, but I wasn't going to do anything because, listen, I am the introvert of all introverts. And nobody was going to know what I was up to. So I was going to wait till the house was quiet, everybody was going to bed, and then I would enter into my room, I would shut the door, and I would just be like, Lord Jesus, come and fit your whole self into my whole self. And my room was going to fill with light. Brilliant light. It was going to be this epic moment that I had never experienced before. It was going to be like nothing ever seen on earth before. That was going to be my introduction to Jesus. Should it not feel like that? Well, let me just tell you, I was disappointed. Because that's not how it went down. That's not at all how it went down. It was actually quite boring by comparison, and I was a little bit angry with my imagination because I had really made this out to be quite the big deal, and it is. In 2002, we were going through our first church hurt, we'll say. It wasn't really a church breakup, but it was church pain. We had lost dear friends and wonderful, true pastoral people. And we were in the throes of being a congregation that was still together but pastorless. We had somebody coming down from Lincoln, Nebraska on a weekly basis, which we all delighted in. That was wonderful. But now we're in this, like, space where we're trying to, like, navigate what this new pastor and his wife was going to be like. And my hunger was still, like, way up here. Like, I'm still, like, super hungry for Jesus. And during this transition time when they came in, they would bring in prophets from Missouri. And I had never heard of prophets. Listen, all of these things that should have been the norm in a charismatic church through my teenage years just weren't. Like, I had never heard of these things. And so I'm like, prophets? What are prophets? And there was one guy that came in. He was like this older gentleman. He came in and he did some like magical kind of prophecy things that were like mind-blowing. Wasn't just like telling you, this is how God feels about you. No, he was doing some things. And I was so intrigued. Like, what is this madness? And can I have some? But these younger folks came in on a Sunday, and they were there to minister to our people. And so at this moment, it's 2002, and I'm pregnant with Autumn. And they were prophesying over John and I, and over the baby in my belly. And at the time, we didn't know that we were having a little girl. But prophesied over her that, you know, she would have fire on her head, and that she would have an insatiable hunger to tell people about Jesus. And we did not name her Autumn because of anything. I'll get to that. But on the backside of prophesying over her, he looks at John and I, and he said something along the lines of, do you have other children? And the audience laughs in the background, and we're like, yeah, there's three of them. And then he's like, do you have a big house? And the audience is uproariously laughing at this point, because we lived on Little House on the Prairie, and like, there just wasn't room for the entire, we had six people living in a very small space, and he just simply said, you're gonna need a bigger house, and then continued on saying that you will house an entire generation. Okay, this is where I'm getting to. This is the moment where you consider the field, right? That's a big word. You house an entire generation? I don't even think at that point I knew what the heck a generation was, you know? Like, I've since had to go and, like, look up, what is a generation? And jury's out on that, to be honest with you. It varies depending on what source you're looking at. But it's a span of time. And so I'm like, wow, we're going to house an entire generation. And at that time, we were just youth group leaders because John had facial hair. But we're going to house an entire generation. And when is this going to happen? When is this going to happen? This was 22 years ago. But I considered the field. And I wondered. And I let my imagination loose to consider what this could look like, what this would be. And at the same time, we had a woman come up to me. This is my fourth pregnancy. I've got children to spare at this point, right? This is my fourth pregnancy, and a woman had come up to me and asked if she could have my baby. This is important. These details are important because this is my introduction, right? This is the introduction season to my field, right? To our field. I'm considering the field. And I have this little baby growing inside of me with a big word to consider as her field. And I've got somebody coming along and asking for my harvest. It is just coincidence, if you believe in that, that we name her Autumn. Her name literally means harvest. You guys have only stumbled upon this line of thinking in the last few weeks where some things went down and I had to dig deep and really start asking God, like, what's going on here? Like, show me. What's happening? What's behind all of this? Like, once you get beyond the hurt, you can start, like, really investigating, like, there's something going on here. And I had always thought, like, in my memory, it was Sadie that I was pregnant with, and the year was 2000. But it wasn't, because I pulled out the tapes and I listened. And then I reached out to Dorothea Shipman, and I'm like, when did you leave Kansas? And then I asked Lisa, when did you move to Kansas? Because I knew that the two mattered for this timeline. And the Shipmans left in late summer of 2000. And Lisa came in the spring of 2002. And Lisa was the first person I told I was pregnant to. And she was just here visiting. And so I knew she, like, that mattered. And so I'm, like, locating all these different time frames to be like, I've got this wrong. It was never Sadie. It was autumn. It was autumn. And as soon as I put the pieces together, I was like, we named her Harvest. We named her Harvest. Yeah. I mean, I was like, whoa, this is big. Are you following my prophetic timeline? Okay. I know it's a lot of information, but I feel like it's important in light of the events. So, in 2018, I am in a space that I love. I'm doing what I love. I'm working with people that I love. I am in a space of acceleration. I'm doing what I longed for. In the summer of 2018, I started walking out in, it's actually, let me preface it with this, it's another season of deep, deep hunger. I know there's more. I know there's more that God has for me. I know there's more. Not because I was unsatisfied. Not because anything wrong had happened. Everything right was happening. And so I start going for these walks, and God is meeting me out there on this country road. And I start at the planting season where, you know, the corn is just little baby cuties, right? Just cute as can be. And I walk out there every day that summer. I don't think I missed a day. And sometimes the kids came with me and sometimes they didn't. And when they didn't, it was just very impactful, the things that the Lord was sharing with me. And I knew that everything in me was shifting and changing unexpectedly. I didn't know that I needed shifts and changes. And as the corn continued to get bigger, you'd have to go out there to really understand, but I started feeling surrounded, and the road became more and more narrow. Corn gets big. Corn gets really big, and you feel kind of closed in by it when you're walking down dirt roads that's enclosed by cornfields. And then one day I'm out there and my kids make fun of me on a regular basis. John throws in little quippy things here and there because I swear to you, the corn was talking. And I could hear their cry. I could hear the cry of the harvest. And I know how crazy that can potentially sound, but the harvest had a voice that day, and I could hardly contain what was happening. I'm literally sowing tears into this ground because the harvest was aching for the truth. The harvest was aching for the knowledge of Jesus Christ. And this continued to happen for the rest of the summer, to where I would go out there and I could hear the harvest talking to me. And in this field, you go down the dirt road. It kind of is a U-shape. And then you come to like a dead end or a gate that says keep out, but it's open. And private property, you'll get shot. That's what it means, right? You know it. And I am a rule follower. And so I would dare not go beyond that point. And one day I was down there with Lily, and she's on her bike. And if you know little Lily at all, you know that she is a rule breaker. and she goes beyond. She doesn't see boundary lines. Like, she just doesn't. It's not in her nature to even have eyes for keep out signs. And so she's like, let's go. And I was like, no, that sign's on there for a reason, and we will not. This went on for 3 days straight, where God is accompanying me with my little Challenger, and she's pressing, and I'm going, I'm getting mad. And one time she actually went beyond, and she rode her bike through there on down the rest of the dirt road. And I'm screaming, Lily, like, you guys, seriously, I am terrified. And I'm standing halfway down the permitted dirt road, and I'm going, Lily, Anna, get back here, as if she's, like, playing in the street with semis. I mean, I'm being ridiculous. My fear is ridiculous. And on the third day, we go down there, and she's basically calling me a chicken with her eyes. And I said, that's enough. We're not having this conversation anymore. I said, you can drive your bike down to the end of the road, and then you turn back. She's exasperated. And then God enters the scene, and he says, go beyond the gate. And I was like, you want me to break the rules? It's very hard for me. And so I did. And I was already jacked up because of the harvest talking to me. But the moment that I stepped through that gate, my eyes were open to things that I've looked down there before. They didn't see what I saw that day. Everything was different there, like otherworldly. And it was the first time that I felt God pulling me. We could say calling me, but I felt pulled into other nations in that space. And I stood there halfway down this overgrown. It was not a dirt road. It was mud. And there were deep ruts. You shouldn't take any vehicle down there, let alone a bicycle. It's mowed up on the other road. This was not being taken care of, though there is corn growing. But it's just, you know what I'm talking about. It's like a jungle. And I stood there in the middle of it all fear gone. And I began for the first time ever to weep for other nations. And I was undone. Absolutely undone. That God, one, would surround me with this harvest in the first place. And it was at that moment that I made a purchase. I believed him. I believed everything that was taking place. I wasn't just in consideration mode anymore. I'm going, yes, God, I agree that what I'm doing here is just playing it safe. What I'm doing here is small. What I'm doing here is like playing Jack in the Box. Wind Angie up. Pop! Bam! That was kind of my existence in the thing that I loved. There comes a time where God doesn't allow us to play small anymore. And this was my moment. And I didn't know who to share it with because I sounded like a crazy loon. I didn't know who would believe my story about the corn talking. I didn't know who would believe that I had actually sat down and figured out how many kernels of corn could potentially grow on every single plant, and that God had me do research on how many acres of corn were out there, and that the totals were in the billions. And that I wept when the corn got their crowns, because that mattered to me. I didn't know who would buy into my story that I had purchased a field and that I was called to impact billions. Do I believe that just individually Angie will personally impact a billion people? No, what I believe is that God has called me to raise up an army of people that believe that God has a field for them to purchase, and they go into it and do the work of the harvest. Do you know that Jesus says, the harvest is white. The harvest is ready. It's the workers that are lacking. So I believe that all of these things that are happening all around me right now, are just coming along to try and steal my harvest. I believe that this spiritual attack, I was told back in March, maybe beginning of April, that there is a soft landing space around me for Jezebel. And I was told this because of my history, of the stories of my history that began with wanting to take my harvest from me. And so these Jezebel attacks have been going on for 22 years. Where there have been varied voices that have come along and attempt to rob my harvest in one way or another. And something happened a few weeks ago surrounding my harvest. And it was the first of many accusations that have been swirling since. And what we have to realize is that the enemy really can only work within truth. But it's truth skewed. It's truth pulled out of bounds. Yes? It has to start in truth. So the only thing that he has access to is something that begins in truth. And then it's pulled out of all proportion. And he's looking for us to buy into his story, his version, if you will, of the truth. Anybody hear anybody say, this is my truth? It's nauseating. There is a truth. We don't each get to have our own version of truth. That's ridiculous. So if you've said that, repent, because I'm being serious. Like, that's not real. Jesus is truth. But what I began to understand is that all of these things that are surrounding, swarming, if you will, my harvest right now, are actually the things that the harvest is dealing with. When we're talking about harvest, we're talking about those who do not know. Those who are aching for the truth, not a version of. And there's a lot. There's a lot going on. There's fatherlessness, sociopathic tendencies, narcissism, lying. All of these things are attacking the harvest. The ones who are hungering and thirsting for Jesus. The ones that are waiting for someone to come along and just give it to them straight. The ones that are waiting for someone to lead them to living water. And who won't stop there, who will give them the full-on measure of what's available to them as those who know Jesus. This is what they're inundated with, is all of these types of things. We can have eyes to see if we don't settle at the opposition. So now I know. Now I know what we're up against. Now, like I said, you know, I'm brought into this field of Robin's playing, and it's beautiful. It's beautiful. But if I think for 1 minute that there are not snakes in there, that there's not some hornets flying around, but you understand what I'm saying? Yes. The field is beautiful. Buy it. But don't be stupid. Right? Sure, there's probably some scorpions in there. Or what were you torturing your sister with yesterday? Crawfish. Probably a stream with a crawfish in it that has little pinchers that want to eat you. Yeah. Probably some prowling lions in your field. You get what I'm saying. Like, let's not be naive. Yes, be taken by the beauty of it, but don't be naive. Know your field. What's in it? What's in it? Why is it important that I'm telling you this? Because I think we're in it. You know? It's been purchased. Listen, I have laid my life down over and over and over and over again. I've turned the other cheek more times than I can count. I've gone low. And that's not to be mocked, mind you. I've paid a high price to be standing in the middle of this field. And you should probably know that among the swarmy, crawly, creepy things that are in your field, you can't actually do anything right. It's just what's true. You can't. You can't say the right thing. You can't do the right thing. Because the enemy has come to kill, to steal, and to destroy. And will not stop until he's accomplished that. So be taken by the beauty, but be wise. We need discernment. We need discernment. We need a higher level of discernment. We need wisdom, and we need the fear of the Lord. The church is in a civil war, friends. That's just what's true. And the harvest, therefore, is in jeopardy because the church can't get along. So we're busying ourselves trying to make amends among one another as a singular bride, then we are concerned about the harvest. So we need to take ownership of this call to be the workers in the field, which means we can't get caught up in all of the peripherals. We just can't. We don't have time for that. Think of a time where you've been broken and hurting and felt disowned and all alone. That's what the harvest is filled with. Those who desperately need to know Jesus. And if this isn't our aim, I don't know why we're here. Truly. I say that with no other intention than to shake us. I don't know why we're here if the harvest is not why we exist. If spreading the good news of Jesus Christ isn't why we're here, then we might as well wrap it up, you know? And I'm not accusing us of anything. I'm just in this space wanting to know. I want to know that we're here for the right purpose. To go picking disciples. Let's go pick some disciples. You know, that's what Jesus did. He just plucked them up out of the ground. He did. He's like, you over there, your life's a wreck. Come follow me. It's not about competition. It's not. Or he wouldn't have told us to lay our lives down. And if we think back to the word that we have that we're stewarding right now about the worship, great word, by the way. Love that. That reveals more of your intercession call, Christy. That we would be living sacrifices, living torches, outlining this worship. I think it's a massive call. That doesn't make us elitist to say so. It just means that we're agreeing with God. And it's important that we lay ourselves down daily. I will follow Christ. I will surrender to his will. Not my will be done. Right? And I do think that this has everything to do with the topic for today of the week, co-missional allies. We can't. We can't complete any of that if we are not laid down, if we do not have eyes on what Jesus has eyes on. If we can't cooperate as a body, we're not going to get a whole lot done. If we aren't going to show up in fullness, we're not going to get a whole lot done. I believe that there is a wind of evangelism, if you will. The winds of an evangelist, perhaps. I don't really know how to say it. It's just what I see. That is going to begin to blow on this place. Because we are a place well equipped to equip. We are well equipped to disciple. We're well equipped to train up and send out. I saw a meme and it was so very interesting. I wish I would have saved it. But there was two funnels. One was with the big part up here, and the other one had it flipped around. And did you see it? Yeah. And the world was underneath both. And the one that was flipped right side up, they were pouring all of the stuff in, and drop. The other one that was flipped with the wide side down, they were pouring in and gush. And it's different than what we have all been raised up in. The church we know keeps you. The church we know pins you. You are a sheep for keeps. You leave, we're breaking up. You know what I'm saying? But the interesting thing is that the Great Commission that Jesus left us with, go ye into all the world and make disciples of the nations. Come on. Why are we not doing this? Why are we not harvest-minded? We need to be. And nobody in this room is exempt from this call. We should be leaking Jesus. Yes? So, Father, we agree with you today that you are the Lord of the harvest. We agree with you that the fields are white. And we do want to change the narrative that the workers are great. There's a multitude of workers. God, let us be a people who are eager to be like, pick me, choose me, send me. I do not pretend to know what this all looks like, God. But I thank you for the field that you have us standing in. And we marvel at your work despite the venom, the stings, the traps, the divots. Marvel at you. We thank you for bringing us to it in the first place. Amen.